May it please the court, counsel. Alan Epstein, representing New Design Construction. With me at council table is John Finn. Excuse me just for one moment while I lower that. The first issue raised on appeal is whether the trial court had jurisdiction or authority on December 31st, 2009 to award Thornton attorney fees on all of New Design's claims rather than on the two claims discussed in the trial court's October 21st, 2009 underlying order of judgment. Prior to trial, both parties submitted proposed findings. Thornton's proposed findings concluded with an award of attorney fees, first on all of New Design's claims and Thornton's back charges advanced at trial, and then separately on two claims that New Design had withdrawn at the conclusion of depositions and a year before trial. After trial, the court entered findings and conclusions on October 21st. The court adopted Thornton's proposed findings in large part verbatim. With respect to the proposed findings on attorney fees, the court made two changes. It corrected two grammatical mistakes, and then it deleted from Thornton's proposed findings the following sentence. The court finds that New Design's claims lacked substantial justification and are substantially frivolous and groundless. See CRS 1317.102, subsection 4. Then on December 31st, the court issued an order stating that its attorney fee award was on all of New Design's trial claims as well as the two claims withdrawn before trial.
So let me stop there. When the court said what you just indicated, was that not at the request of the parties to clarify differing views of what they thought the court had said originally?
Yes, it was.
So the court was in a phone conference doing a clarification then. So how is that an amended judgment, I guess, if the parties asked it to clarify what it meant, what it had already stated?
Our argument is that it was an amended judgment because the original order of judgment as a matter of law denied Thornton's attorney fees request with respect to all of the tried claims. The parties were not in agreement about what the order meant, but based on the argument we're advancing on appeal, because the trial court deliberately deleted the sentence that would have found the claims to be frivolous and groundless, the original October 21st order necessarily denied them. Then by operation of law, the court was amending its order on December 31st. On December 31st, the court issued an order stating that the attorney fee award was on all of New Design's claims. At a subsequent hearing, the court awarded Thornton approximately $350,000 in attorney fees. The New Design contends that the October 21st order effectively denied Thornton's attorney fee request, except for the two withdrawn claims specifically discussed, because Thornton did not move to alter or amend within 15 days under Rule 59 or appeal, and because the trial court did not amend its October 21st order under Rule 59C, the court lacked jurisdiction to amend its order on December, change its order, but we'd argue amend its order to award fees on all of New Design's claims. Under the maxim that I won't attempt to pronounce, but that means the inclusion of certain items implies the exclusion of others, by deleting the most critical sentence from Thornton's proposed findings, determining New Design's claims to be frivolous and groundless, and then awarding fees on New Design's withdrawn claims, the court necessarily denied Thornton's attorney fee request on all of New Design's tried claims. Further support for that interpretation is that under CRS 1317.1031 and this court's recent In Re Marriage of Tognoni decision, the court must explicitly consider the factors set forth in 1317.103(1)(a)-(h) in determining whether a party's claims are substantially frivolous or groundless. The October 21st order addressed the withdrawn claims to some extent, but said nothing about the tried claims. Although the court did do that later, that was in the context of the hearing determining what amount to assess, not whether fees should be assessed in the first instance.
Mr. Epstein, your position position is that on December 21st, the court was without jurisdiction to modify that earlier October order?
On December 31st, it was without jurisdiction to do so because if the October 21st order was a final order, then if it was a final order, and we argue that it is, then the court lost jurisdiction after the time to file post-trial motions or
appeals. There's case law, certainly the Kennedy versus Gillum case that says the award of attorney's fees is not final until the amount is set. Now, there's no dispute here that no amount was set in October, right? Everyone agrees no amount was set in October.
That portion of the order granting fees was not final. That's what Kennedy says. In Kennedy, the court ordered, I'm going to assess attorney's fees, and the amount of fees had not yet been determined. Because that was an award granting fees, the court retained jurisdiction to change its mind and then later deny them. That's what happened in Kennedy. In this case, our argument is that part of the court's order granting fees on the two withdrawn claims was not final because the amount had not been determined. But with respect to the fees that had been denied, that became a final order along with the rest of the underlying judgment, for which there was no need for a Rule 54B order, and therefore, as a final order, it had to be appealed or a Rule 59 motion filed.
What was the language in the October order that you say denied fees on the other claims? Just the deletion of that sentence?
Yes.
So there wasn't language.
There's no language in the order granting fees.
But what you say the only language, if I understand it correctly, the language that's now final is the language denying fees. That's how you're distinguishing Kennedy, right? The denial of fees becomes final. The granting of fees is not final. That's your, I think you just said, right?
Right.
But there's nothing, we can't look at the order and say, oh, there's language denying fees, and now that's appealable. Because we don't find such language in the order.
In order to grant fees, the order had to say the court is granting fees. It didn't. In fact, it did just the opposite. It deleted the language that said North New Design's claims are frivolous and groundless. It deliberately deleted that language. What other interpretation can you give there?
But it did not put a sentence saying I am denying fees on all those claims.
It did not. Okay. But by implication, under the maxim which I discussed, that's the effect of the order, because the court did two things in the October 21st order. It adopted most of what Thornton proposed verbatim, and it deleted the sentence that said.
Let me ask you one other question about the cases then. When you filed your last brief, I don't think the Benefield case was decided, but in the Benefield case, and I was on that divisional, I can't remember everything about it, I think we held there that the court has discretionary authority to reconsider an award of attorney's fees and costs. How do you distinguish that case?
I'm not familiar. I don't think the Benefield case was cited in any of the briefing. And I would ask that we be able to address that. If that case addresses this procedural posture, I'd ask that we be able to review it and see whether it does address this.
I'll press you on it then if you're not familiar with it. I thought you might have seen it. Okay.
Returning to the issue of the finality of assuming that the order, the October 21st order, by deleting the sentence finding the claims to be frivolous and groundless, was in effect an order denying fees on all but what was specifically discussed, the withdrawn claims, then the question of finality I'd like to address, because an outstanding attorney fee issue is separate from an underlying judgment and doesn't affect the finality of the underlying judgment, the October 21st order was final, except for the order awarding fees on the two withdrawn claims. But that part of the order denying an award of fees on the tried claims was also final, since an order denying an attorney fee request is a final order, and a Rule 54B order is not required to make it appealable. Since it was a final order, it became subject to either Rule 59 review or appeal within 45 days. Since neither occurred, the trial court was without jurisdiction on December 31st to amend the order, the October 21st order, to award fees on all of the claims. And the cases, again, I'm not familiar with the case Judge Richmond just cited, but all of the cases on which Thornton relies to argue that the court retained jurisdiction are cases in which the trial court either did not determine whether to assess fees at all, or determined that it would assess fees but had not yet determined an amount. This case is in a unique procedural posture that is not addressed, I believe, by any Colorado case, where an order grants in part but doesn't determine the amount of fees and denies it in part. And there's no reason why that part of the order denying the fees on New Design's tried claims should not have been considered a final order. And I'd like to point out that this is only fair. New Design interpreted the October 21st order, just as I'm suggesting. Because the court deliberately deleted that sentence, it was New Design's impression that the court was denying fees on all but the two withdrawn claims. And it's not fair to then, when it's not apparent from the text of the order, to then say I'm awarding fees on all of the claims, when the time for New Design to appeal, if it had so chosen to do so, and it may have chosen to do so had it known that was what the court's intent was, had passed.
I thought you said if it was granting fees, then it's not a final order, so your time to appeal wouldn't have run yet.
I'm talking about that part of the order part of the order New Design interpreted as denying the majority of the fees that Thornton was requesting.
Right. On December 31st, there was this phone call with the attorneys and the trial court, correct? I take it there's no recording of that phone call.
No.
Okay. Was there any clarification and by written order afterwards by the court that it was then going to have a hearing on the entire attorney's fees matter?
Yeah, on December 31st, it did that.
Okay.
But neither Thornton nor the trial court has ever explained why the court deleted the sentence finding that New Design's claims were frivolous and groundless from its October 21st order. And in law, words or the lack thereof are important, and that's my point. On the withdrawn claims, the trial court found one claim to be frivolous and one groundless. However, the court heard no evidence at trial with respect to those claims. It simply adopted Thornton's proposed findings verbatim, which under Coors v. Security Life requires the appellate court to give them close scrutiny. The claims were withdrawn within a short period of time after the conclusion of depositions, which is encouraged under Rule 16. Sanctioning New Design for following Rule 16 frustrates its purpose. Assuming that the trial court had jurisdiction to award fees on all of New Design's claims on December 31st, I submit that a review of the record shows that all of New Design's claims were not groundless. The court found Mr. McWilliams was not credible, but the court made no specific findings that New Design's eyewitnesses to the project who testified were not credible.
Counsel, I recognize you're a seasoned attorney, but I did want to remind you that you have a minute and a half left if you're going to save it.
I will reserve the remainder of my time.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. I'm Charlotte Wiesner. I represent the City of Thornton. With me at council table is Margaret Miller, Assistant City Attorney for Thornton. I'd like to start by addressing a couple of the questions that were asked of Mr. Epstein, if you don't mind. First is, I wanted to go back, Judge Roman, to your question about sort of the circumstances surrounding the clarification order. Both parties did request it. We did have a telephone conference with the judge. During that call, anybody could have asked anything they wanted to. The judge made clear during the call that her award was intended to be on all the claims and all the challenges to the back charge. And that call was on December 9th. On December 31st, she entered a written order basically saying exactly the same thing. And the hearing on attorney's fees took place on April 30th, 2010, nearly 4 months later. I think what I'd like to start with is a jurisdictional argument. It's the sole legal issue before the court that's reviewed de novo. And then I'll move on to the other three issues that New Design raises, namely that the claims, there wasn't evidence that the claims were groundless, that the court was required to allocate, and that the court improperly awarded certain expert costs. I'm sure you know this, but requests for attorney's fees under the groundless and frivolous statute are governed by Rule 121. They are not subject to Rule 59 or Rule 60. They are not final judgments until the amount is set. The only exception to that rule is if damages or fees are tried as damages as part of the case in chief, and I don't think anybody's suggesting that that was the case here.
It is, because Mr. Epstein spent a lot of time on it, and frankly, I paused when I read this, too. I sort of challenged you there at the end when he said that neither the trial court nor the city of Thornton have ever explained why the court took out the phrase with the rule of interpretation. Let's see, he wasn't brave enough to attempt it, but expressio alterius. Respond to that, please.
Well, I can't tell you why the court dropped the language. When we reviewed the judgment that was issued in October, we thought it was a mistake because there was also an S dropped in the same paragraph on the word is, and then when it went on to award the claims on the dismissed claims, and those had to be addressed separately because they weren't ever addressed at trial, it started with the word moreover. And so we interpreted her order to, whether that sentence was dropped or not, to have been basically a mistake. I believe Mr. Epstein said we have.
So yeah, but you had an entire conference, and you just got through saying that both sides could ask whatever questions mm-hmm. they wanted. Didn't anybody ask the trial court why it wasn't there?
Right out of the box, my intent was to award fees on all of New Design's claims and all of its challenges or its opposition to Thornton's back charges. I mean, it was crystal clear, and it was one of the first things she said in the call. And I believe Mr. Epstein said we've never explained why she deliberately dropped it. I don't know that that's true. We thought it was a mistake. But clearly the case is distinguished, and there are lots of them cited in the briefs, between an appeal on the merits, which is a final judgment, and issues relating to attorney fees awards, which are not final judgments until the amount of the award is set. It provides for two levels of appeals. All the cases say that. Now, New Design, as you know, argues that the denial of its fees, the denial of the fees, and as Judge Richmond points out, it doesn't ever say that. It's an implication, is final and needed to be appealed at the time when the appeal time ran on the judgment on the merits. We don't agree with that, and the case they cite in their brief is Munaz versus Meisner. It's a Supreme Court case. I don't think that case is particularly helpful because that case does not address the situation here where there's a New Design is claiming where there's a partial award and a partial denial. In that case, no fees were awarded. It was a complete denial. And at that point, of course,
I assume it wasn't implied.
No, it was not implied. There's no case that I'm aware of, and I think Mr. Epstein acknowledged this, that a partial denial is appealable as part of the merits, and a partial award is not a final judgment that the judge can revisit.
And it make for piecemeal appeals, which is what we thought we were trying to avoid in these kinds of cases, I thought.
Well, you're reading my mind.
It's an open book.
There's a Court of Appeals case that I think is very helpful in this situation. It's M Life Insurance Company v. Saper and Wallach. It's a 2001 case. And in that case, M Life was appealing an order assessing fees against it, but where there was no amount. And the court said, well, it's not final. And interestingly, both parties, which is a bit amusing to me, argued that the court should treat it as final, the entitlement issue as final, because it was inextricably entwined, excuse me, I can speak Latin, but not say inextricably, entwined with the judgment. And the court said, we're not going to do that because of concerns of judicial economy. And so there's a bright line rule. Decision on the merits is final. Issues relating to attorney's fees is not final. And I tried to think through how this would work if the courts chose to go with what New Design is suggesting. You've got an appeal on the purported denial. Meanwhile, the motions for fees and the hearing on the amount and everything goes forward on the portion of the award, granting fees. And you've got all these different timetables. You've got the Court of Appeals timetable for briefing and hearing oral argument. You've actually got a quick turnaround on the amount of fees, because under Rule 121, it says it's 15 days that you have to file a motion unless the court says otherwise. And you have a hearing, and you go forward, and you get an award on the fees, and then that's subject to appeal. What happens if in the first appeal they come back and they go, well, we don't think the court adequately supported the award denying fees, and we're remanding it? So you go, that goes back. You could have, I had trouble counting it, but I think at least four appeals. And that's exactly what the M Life case says you don't want to have. If it's not a final judgment, then it really comes down to just concepts of what a court can do where there isn't a final judgment. It retains jurisdiction. It can revisit the award on its own. A party can file a motion for reconsideration. It can amend its judgment. It can clarify it. Here, the court had jurisdiction. 4 months before we got to the hearing, the court had clarified that her intent was to award fees on everything. And when the parties filed hearing briefs and the motion for fees and the response and the reply and everything, all of the factors in the statute that the court was required to address were covered and briefed in detail.
Can you clarify something else then? So the award for fees comes under the Growlin statute?
It does.
To summarize it, so the court made a specific finding that it was finding the entire case to be groundless?
Yes, and I'll get to that.
Okay.
The other thing I want to mention is, if it wasn't a final judgment and the court had jurisdiction to go back, and you can call it, I call it clarify it. If you want to call it amend it, it doesn't matter because the court had a right to amend the judgment. Then the doctrine of expressio unius exclusio alterius doesn't really have any bearing on anything. Because what that doctrine says is it creates an inference. And it's mainly applied in statutory construction. But New Design cites to a main case, Blue Spruce. And in that case, it was applied in the context of whether evidence was received by consent on an issue not raised in the pleadings. And the court said, we're not willing to make that inference. But here, you don't even have to look at this, because the judge clarified her order. By the time of the fee hearing, everybody knew exactly what her intent was. There was no need to go back and guess and apply this doctrine to try to figure it out. I'd like to move on next to the fee award. And first, really make two points. The court followed the required procedure, and the court adequately supported the order with appropriate findings required under the case law and the statute. As you know, it's an abuse of discretion standard. The court is required to consider the factors in 1317.103. It cannot just make a conclusory allegation that a claim lacks substantial justification, but has to at least go through the factors and determine which ones are relevant and make findings.
But my memory here, the trial court did not accept the testimony of New Design's expert, in a separate and apart from the president. Avery, is that the name?
It was, how can I forget his name? I can tell you. Justin Austin.
Austin.
She found he wasn't qualified. He was allowed to testify, and afterwards she found he wasn't qualified to give the opinion that he gave, and that he didn't present a critical path construction schedule, which was required by the contract.
That related to all the claims and the COVs.
Mm-hmm. But what I want to address in a minute is, I think there's absolutely clear statements in the record in her fee order that she didn't just find Mr. McWilliams and Mr. Austin to not be credible. She found no credible evidence, and she says it at least three times. Now, under the factors, New Designs focuses on one. Was there conflicting evidence? Absolutely. I mean, how many cases go to trial where there isn't conflicting evidence? The ultimate inquiry is, was there any credible evidence to support New Designs' claims? New Design requested a hearing. It was entitled to that. A hearing took place. At the hearing, New Design had the opportunity to fully argue the factors in 1317-103. It already argued them in writing in its response to Thornton's motion for fees and in its hearing brief. And it had an opportunity to put on evidence and testimony. Interestingly, at one point during the hearing, the court asked New Design's counsel if he was asking her to reconsider her order, referring to the October order. And New Design's counsel didn't say yes. Basically made the same jurisdictional argument that was made here today. So the court clearly followed the procedure that was required in assessing fees. Now I want to turn to the order and the hearing where the findings were made that clearly support the fee award. Again, in order for a claim to be deemed groundless, it's assumed that the plaintiff has a valid legal theory, but there's little or no credible evidence to support it. The first place to look is the judgment. I think you know there were over 30 separate claims. They all had separate facts. They all had separate documents. It was a rather complicated. I think it was a challenge for any trial judge to work through all 30. But if you look at the judgment, it summarizes the evidence that was presented. And on many of these claims, it was a complete swearing contest. The court could not have found in favor of Thornton unless it accepted Thornton's witnesses' testimony and rejected in toto New Design's witnesses' testimony. And interestingly, some of the change order proposals that New Design mentions in its opening brief are some of the best examples of that. The court also held a hearing on fees. And at that hearing, the court was very clear that the hearing was going to be on everything. And nobody at the hearing disputed there was conflicting evidence. Thornton conceded it, and the court acknowledged it. One of the things that the court said that I want to just read at the hearing was, all right, so I understand what you're trying to do, Mr. Finn, but I agree that I believe that the court heard conflicting evidence, and based on all the evidence that I heard, I made a decision and I made findings with regard to what evidence was credible and what evidence was not credible, and based my findings and my order on that. In the order on fees, New Design argues that in its opening brief, it's unclear whether the court was finding there was no credible evidence or whether New Design just didn't follow the contract provisions. I can't agree with that. The court said New Design completely failed to provide credible evidence of Thornton's breach of the party's contract. The court therefore finds that New Design's COP claims were not supported by credible evidence. A few lines later, New Design had little or no credible evidence to support its claims. I am unfortunately out of time and didn't get to the last two issues.
Counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the court, John Finn on behalf of New Design. Since I was part of the telephone conversation, I thought it more appropriate me to adjust. Let me clarify two things. One, the hearing was not, or the telephone call was not to clarify the order. The situation we were in was they had brought a motion for attorney's fees showing a significant amount, $300,000 plus attorney's fees. We had responding to the two issues that attorney's fees were granted in the order. The court then on December 1 said, set it for a hearing. And we basically got on the phone together and said, what's the hearing on? So we called the court to find out what the hearing was going to be on. Second thing, the court did not right out of the box say, we'll have a hearing on the whole. The first thing the court said, in fact, was, remind me, counsel, wasn't there a prevailing party clause in this contract? To which we both responded, no, there was not. Third issue. If counsel, as she has stated, thought it was simply a mistake, there's a very easy remedy for that. It's Rule 59. If there is a mistake in the ruling, they could bring a timely motion to correct the order. Why did you drop this language? The court had plenty of opportunity to address that as well in her order. Never did. No one ever explained it. So those are the three issues. To clarify the things that had come up in arguments made by counsel.
Thank you both for your all of you actually, for your excellent arguments. And the case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.